The Homeland Security Department Science and Technology Directorate will soon ask its researchers and vendors to run their software through a security test before DHS continues its work with them. Now, secure software is one of the 10 priorities for the directorate this year. Doug Maughan is the Cybersecurity Division Director for the S&T Directorate at DHS. Scott Towsley is the Deputy Director. They tell Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco what they're learning from researchers and vendors at this year's Research and Development Showcase. The first voice you hear is Doug Maughan's.
So there are several goals in the showcase. Obviously, one of them is an opportunity for our funded researchers to show the progress they're making on the research that we're funding. And the second goal is to also have in the room customers and operators and others who would potentially use their technology and give them an opportunity to provide feedback to the researchers. That's a lot better than just having my program managers who work with them on a regular basis providing that evaluation, but it's good to get the operational perspective to the R&D that we're funding.
There was a mention by Chris Inglis in the keynote about overlays, and in a sense, this is another overlay for us doing our job. We put a lot of things out in writing. We go and talk to the community in all sorts of different ways all over the country and the world. And we run this event every year, year and a half, whatever the timing works out, to sort of provide a system for that same sort of conversation to happen in a fairly intense way with a lot of different partners, a lot of organizations, a lot of tie-ins that you'll see in the 3 days here.
So, Doug, you touched on 10 strategic goals that you have. And, of course, DHS, there's a whole lot going on, and you mentioned that your office fits specifically into one little corner of it, but, you know, you're not completely contained to just that. I heard you mention a bit about secure software and the idea of having vendors go through a security assessment before you necessarily accept and move forward with them. So can you tell me a little bit about that and what we can expect to see?
Sure. So we have an existing program and a research test and evaluation facility called the Software Assurance Marketplace. To date, we have not required any of our research community to submit their deliverables to DHS and have them be evaluated. And so our intent is to initiate that process so that the researchers understand that even when though they're developing research quality software, we still need to test it for evaluation of quality. Our larger vision is exactly as you mentioned. It was also mentioned in the President's Cybersecurity National Action Plan, this idea of almost an underwriter's laboratory idea for software and software security. So how do we hold vendors accountable to ensure that the products that they're submitting and selling to the government are as high quality as they can be? And part of our story is that the Software Assurance Marketplace that exists and is used daily could be part of that equation.
Do you have a timeline for when you're going to, you know, officially require this of vendors?
So there's two pieces to this. One is the what's going to be required of the researchers, and that will begin in FY16 with any new contracts. The vendors is a much larger picture than just an S&T picture. So there has been some discussion at the White House. It came out as part of the President's National Action Plan. We're arguing that what S&T brings to the table is something that can help execute that idea from the National Action Plan, but we're not driving that process out of the White House.
And Scott, you know, we heard about 10 of these strategic goals, but what others are really important from the S&T standpoint? Are there a few in particular that you think are particularly important for you this year?
The list could be 3 or 5, it could be 10, it could be 20. It's really shaping and forming in all sorts of different ways. And in essence, the priorities are probably best addressed back into the customer base because each of our customer areas sort of has a different take on some of these priorities. I do think the other thing that's underwriting all of this is the fact that increasingly, almost everything we do, all of these 10 areas and more, are increasingly cross-wired into lots of other areas of the entire S&T activity. In essence, we're sort of creating a new component, if you will, on the fly, and that reality in a long-term sense is percolating into the, again, the choice of which list of priorities or the way we describe them. But that's a thread that's growing and becoming a larger and larger connection to how we do work.
We heard you talk about your partnerships with Silicon Valley, the companies, the startups that you're working with. And Doug, you talked a little bit about the idea of kind of getting them through a process that typically takes a very long time and a process that they're probably not very familiar with. Can you touch a little bit more on that? Can you go into some more details to how that's going?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So normal processes for companies include white papers and full proposals and evaluations, and a traditional solicitation would take 9 to 12 months. In partnership with our contracting and our legal organizations within science and technology, we've been able to shorten that time frame into a 3 or 4 month window. The idea being that because we're dealing with Silicon Valley companies or non-traditional performers, as we like to call them, which means they've never done work with the government, we're asking for, first and foremost, an application. Anyone can fill it out. And the idea here is this is mostly about company and investment. Where have they gotten funding in the past? And, of course, what's their technical solution? That evaluation can take place in a very short amount of time. Our review team consists of S&T as well as other components, CBP, FEMA, NPPD, all participating. And then the idea is, once I've reviewed your application, if we want to invite you in for an oral pitch, I can do that. From our legal and contracting perspective, as long as it's a fair and open competition and every vendor is asked the same set of questions, I can now do an oral pitch and I no longer have to do a 40-page proposal. So in the first round, we went from invitation to do an oral presentation to award in 10 days because we were able to make the decision on the spot, just like they do in Silicon Valley, give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And then the contracting process with another transaction authority type contract, non-FAR based, is much shorter. We don't have to deal with all of the financial normalities of a traditional FAR contract. And so we were able to do a much more quickly done process. And these are small companies. They're not large companies. They don't have a big infrastructure either. And so that process is, on their side, a matter of a day to accept the contract. And on our side, you know, in the first one that was awarded last Friday and will be announced shortly, it was 10 days total.
What about some of the risk that comes with dealing with, you know, startups, companies that I think you mentioned have only been around for maybe a couple months or something like that?
So our model is we're actually not going to be the first buyer. So we're looking at companies that are typically at least 6 months old, maybe 12, but not 36. So the idea here is they're already going down a commercial pathway. All we want them to do is to open up the aperture and think about the homeland security applications for their commercial product. If they've already had investment by an accelerator or an incubator or seed funding or something like that, and they're still alive and well, that's a good indication that they've got some stability, they've got some technology that's an opportunity. And so that's the way we're looking at it, is we're not a first buyer, but we're also making sure the company is not so old that they won't be willing to change their commercial product to consider a homeland security application.
And Scott, what has the reaction been like from those startups? What have you heard from them?
Well, the process is still getting started, so the conversation, in a sense, has really just begun. And a large part of what the effort is right now, as of today, is still the communication of our intent and our procedure and how we're trying to make this work. And I think it'll unfold as this year goes on, next year happens. It'll take a couple of years for the system to sort of unfold, like the transition to practice program that we mentioned that was done earlier took a little time to unfold and work through and sort of unflower into the success it's grown into.
And for one or both of you, kind of switching gears a little bit here, the president introduced the National Cybersecurity Plan, and DHS obviously has a huge part in all of this. But from your perspectives, what are you working on now? You know, what are some top priorities surrounding that plan for you right now?
So the R&D strategic plan, as you can imagine, was done with multiple agencies involved, and we've certainly been one of the leading organizations. And I think as you look at that R&D strategic plan, it's everything is not new, right? This is a little bit of a restatement of what was in the 2011 plan. But I think if you look at the way it's characterized in some of the areas that it's talking about, the human side of cybersecurity hasn't been in any research plans. It's on our list. It's things we've been talking about. Now this gives us some ammunition to go and start up some research activities in that area. Detection and recovery, adaptation, all pieces associated with the cybersecurity side of the equation. But I think as you noticed in our the 10 visions that we set forward, several of them are driven by what's in the R&D strategic plan and working in partnership with OSTP and OMB to look at what funding are we going to put behind the R&D strategic plan, and then multiple agencies, NSF and others, will all be participating in some fashion at some of those topics that are in the strategic plan.
The two things I would add is that there's been mention in the Silicon Valley piece especially of trying to access non-traditional performers. And in essence, part of the other stuff we've talked about is trying to bring in some non-traditional academic and research elements that have not often been a part of cybersecurity in a classic sense. And some of the social science areas especially are ways to tap into the user community, better tie into how things get used, how they are effective, and so forth. And I think the other thing I would bring up is the same sort of adaptive and non-traditional contracting and access mechanisms that we're using in the Silicon Valley effort is also something that we need to think hard about how to roll into the entire education space, because there's so much churn going on in education that is turning into non-traditional options, unusual options, adaptive sorts of things. And I think cybersecurity, as it keeps unfolding in a sophisticated domain that touches a lot of different areas, thinking about how to approach the education problem in that at all levels of all kinds in the same sort of flexible, adaptive, sometimes non-traditional way is going to be very important to us.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add, anything else that you're working on that you want to mention?
Well, I think the one thing to point out is, I mentioned it briefly, which is the critical infrastructure security, but this also ties into the Silicon Valley, and the topic that we did on the first solicitation was on the security of the Internet of Things. And so I think that whole area, we like to say, put smart in front of it, smart car, smart grid, smart medical device. All of those are things we're looking at and thinking about. How do we ensure the next generation of those products are as secure as they can be?
I think the other thing is it's almost an organizational aspect. The division has grown. We're doing a lot of different things. If you look at the staff that's in the pictures this year versus last year, there's been some change in turnover. We brought new people in. We've had some people transition out and go off to other things. And we think we've got a really strong group. We've got some really good people that have joined us, some really good people that we've graduated and sent off to other bigger and better things. And so we're looking to keep building our capabilities through the quality of the staff that we've been able to bring in and graduate both and keep building on that.
Scott Towsley, Cybersecurity Division Deputy Director for the Science and Technology Directorate at Homeland Security, and Doug Mon, Cybersecurity Division Director at DHS S&T. Speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends.